Hello and welcome to Heroes Unmasked, staff stories from Leeds Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust with me, Caroline Verdon. Here's a question for you. What do champion fencers, award-winning sheep farmers and professional rugby players have to do with Leeds Teaching Hospitals? Answer? They all work for the hospitals. This series goes behind the scenes to meet directors, doctors, support staff and everyone in between to find out who the people behind the masks really are. Hello and well done for finding episode 3. To make sure you stay on top of all the episodes, do click follow, click like, give us a review. That would be fantastic. On today's episode, we chat to Mr. Chris Parsons, who, to give him his full job title, and it's a very long one, is a consultant paediatric general and neonatal surgeon with a subspecialist interest in colorectal at Leeds Children's Hospital. Try getting that on a business card. What a lot of people don't know about him, though, is that he had an early midlife crisis at the age of 30 and actually walked out on his career. But in doing so, what he learnt was invaluable.
There was a number of things that all sort of came together in a bit of a perfect storm, I think. I lost my dad towards the end of medical school and not sure ever really got my head around that properly. Also left Scotland where I'd done all my training. So I've been in Edinburgh for 9 years and was persuaded to move to London and take a junior doctor's job at Great Ormond Street, which was a phenomenal experience. But it kind of slowed down the career progression. And I was very aware of the fact that all the way through education and early surgical training, the focus always seemed to be on tomorrow. And it was always what you were going to achieve and where you were going to end up. And I had a little moment of clarity and I thought, well, I don't think I've necessarily stopped and really enjoyed today. I haven't really done anything yet that I'm really proud of or that really matters. And that may sound crazy given that I got through med school and was in surgical training. And I was finding living in London without too many friends around me quite lonely. And I think it's fair to say there's a fairly regimented career structure within surgery. And things weren't progressing quite as quickly as I'd hoped because I'd moved. And there was an element of frustration, I think. I'd suddenly hit 30. I'd always thought I knew what I wanted to do. And there were big frustrations building up around not being able to do that and the other stuff that kind of gets in the way. And the truthful story is my kid sister works in corporate travel. So every time we got together as a family, she'd just come back from opening some amazing hotel in Russia and was telling me all about these wonderful experiences she was having. And like most people, when you go into medicine, you think, oh, one day I'll be able to travel. And that had never happened. So an opportunity presented itself that I knew would probably not be brilliant for my career, but that would hopefully afford me that time and space to reflect on where I was going, what I was doing, why I was doing it, and just get some headspace and get out, really. And that was an overland expedition from Stoke Mandeville Hospital to Cape Town, led by a young man called Colin Javens. And Colin, at the age of 19, dove into the sea and broke his neck. And he's paralysed from the shoulders down. And yet, despite that, he'd come back from that injury and still had the desire, the strength, the fortitude to put together a team to become the first person ever in the world with his level of injury to drive from Stoke Mandeville to Cape Town. And so I went along for an interview at Stoke Mandeville, where, for reasons that never fully became clear, they gave me the job. So I took a year out, and got myself involved in, it was called Driving Home Expedition, and it was undoubtedly one of the most important things I did. Spent 164 days in a Land Rover with a phenomenal team of other people, getting him to Cape Town, despite him losing a quarter of his body weight, having 5 pressure sores on his body, spilling boiling hot coffee into his lap on day 6 of the expedition, and all the other trials and tribulations that come with that sort of a trip. So that was my headspace, really. That was the time to clear the air. And what I found was that sitting there driving through the Sahara or the Nubian Desert or all these other amazing places, I was traveling. I knew I was doing something great and I was loving it. But I really, really miss fixing children. And I can't, you know, it is that silly and it may sound a bit silly, but that came very clearly into focus as what I wanted to do. And I'd always kind of known it, but other stuff had got in the way. And that opportunity gave me the time to really refocus on that. So I came back and thought I was ready to dive straight back in. But then another little opportunity presented itself to be involved in another charitable world first expedition led by an amazing lady called Herta von Stiegel. And she's one of the top 100 women in the city of London who was involved in a charity called Enam Alamein. And she tried to climb Kilimanjaro with her husband and had been unsuccessful. But turning disaster into success, thought, well, maybe I could use this as an exercise to explore. I think she called it buddyship or buddying up or something. And it was a concept in industry and in business where you take someone that's skilled at something and buddy them up with someone that isn't as skilled. And Enam Alamein is a charity in Andover who support people with disability leading normal lives. So they have huge challenges for one reason or another, and they get buddied up basically with their support workers to see if they can achieve their full potential in what you and I would call normal life. And she saw an opportunity there to take a group of people, both able-bodied and people with disability, and try and climb Kilimanjaro. And I got the phone call to see if I'd be up for supporting that medically, and was crazy enough or sensible enough or whatever to take it. And so went off and did that, and immensely proud to have been a part of getting, I think, 60% of us got to the top. And of the six disabled people, we got half of them to the top, which was...
That's incredible.
Phenomenal. Yeah. No, yeah, it got filmed. It got turned into a little movie called The Mountain Within. And I think it won a prize at the Rocky Mountain Film Festival in 2009. And there's a book, apparently. I've never read the book, but there's a book called The Mountain Within that she wrote about it all. My CV looked an awful lot like a remote area medic for a long time. And in amongst those two, I mean, just awesome experiences. I'd struggled to get work, and a friend who worked in TV said, oh, Chris, I've just come back from doing the first Love Island. They've gone on to do American Survivor. Given your remote area skills, would you be up for trying that? So I went and did a season with them in Fiji for 3 months, living in a sugar plantation in a tent, providing their medical support and lancing boils. I seem to spend most of my time lancing boils.
Perhaps part of that situation you might not be desiring to relive again.
I think I can say I'm an expert in lancing boils. What relevance that has to day-to-day practice at the Leeds Children's Hospital in Yorkshire, I'm not sure. But yeah, no, it was one of those things where opportunities presented themselves, and it seemed crazy not to take them. So I did. It knocked my career back a fair bit. But I hope A, it gives me some good stories at dinner, but also that's a whole different skill set that hopefully I bring to day-to-day work here.
And at that point when, you know, you're just turned 30 and you perhaps told friends and relatives that, hey, this is my plan. You know, this career that I've been working extremely hard at for, you know, forever.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go on a bit of a car ride, actually.
Yeah.
What was their reaction?
So the professor of surgery at Great Ormond Street told me I was, I won't repeat on air what he said, but he didn't think it was a very good idea. my mentor down there was kind enough to say, look, I think it will have an impact. It will slow your progression. I still think you'll get there. But I think he got it, and he said that if it's something you really need to go and do, go and do it. And I'm enormously grateful for that advice, and it would be, you know, I think I'm about the age now that he was then. And I think if anyone came to me, it's not the standard career advice, because there is a very structured progress that you're expected to make, and it counts against you if you take too long. But I do think it has allowed me to have a focus about why I'm here and what I'm doing that has helped me get through some pretty difficult times, particularly recently with all that's been going on. The ability to go home and look at those photos and remind myself of what we did and where I was at, where I was when I came back, and be able to say, no, it really is just about the kids. And all the other stuff, all the politics, all the other bits that can get in the way, they're important and they're part of life. But that's not really why I'm or we're here.
So would you say then that making this decision to upend your career, which left many peers and mentors aghast at what you were doing, do you think actually on a day-to-day basis, it has actually made you better now today at what you do?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think there are so many demands on our time, so many, rightly, it's a heck of a job that we do. And there are occasions when things aren't going well for whatever reason. It's invariably nobody's fault. There's a whole bunch of things that line up and you think, oh gosh, why am I still here at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night? It would be easy to allow frustration to come in at times. But as I say, I go back to sitting on the roof of the Land Rover, going through the Sahara or Ethiopia in particular was a memorable experience. One of the guys we took up Kilimanjaro had been knocked over by a motorbike at the age of 4 and struggled to even walk down the street. But seeing him get 5 days into the 6 day climb, watching Colin drive all the way to Cape Town, it sort of puts everything in perspective and you think, yeah, I can do this. If they can do that, I can do this. And there's usually a child there that needs our help, and that's what we're here for.
It sounds to me as though that journey that you took from Stoke Mandeville to Cape Town was pretty transformative. Do you think you got as much from that trip as Colin did?
That's an interesting question. Nearly. I'll say nearly because he got a wife out of it. I didn't.
I mean, fair enough.
I hadn't really thought about that before. I got an awful lot out of it. There's no doubt about it. Whether we've never talked. I mean, he's godfather to my eldest. We're still phenomenally close even now. I don't think I'd ever thought about it like that. I think all of us on that trip got something special out of it. It cost us a fair bit to do, but we got something amazing from it.
I think there's there's a lot of careers that have that element of pressure on them where, you're always asked, aren't you, where are you going to be in 5 years' time? What are you going to be doing in 5 years' time? And even down to, just being a kid and, right, GCSEs, what are you going to pick? This is going to affect your A-levels, your degree, your job, your career, completely. Your future. And there's sort of like a societal hesitancy to take that time out for yourself.
I think so. And I probably first became aware of it when I did my medical elective in Zimbabwe. I went over there to a mission hospital for 3 months and met just a gorgeous group of people out there. And there was one guy that stands out. I wish I could remember his name, but I can't, unfortunately. At the end of the day, once we finished clinic, I'd go and play football with the kids from the mission school. And it was loads of fun. It was full on intense. It was a 250-bed admission hospital, and it was in the middle of rural Zimbabwe. So there was me and a couple of Swiss doctors, and that was it, running the place. And often there were some old boys from the school that would come back, and there was this one guy I got to know quite well. And at the end of the football, when the sun went down, we'd go and get a beer in the beer hall. He'd come and have one beer, and he'd go home. And I after a while, I said to him, he was always smiling. He was the happiest man I'd ever met in my life. I said, you're just the happiest bloke I've ever met. I come from a country where we have everything, and it doesn't seem like there's an awful, you've got an awful lot. And he said to me, Chris, I get up in the morning, I work in my fields, I go and work for the Buana who gives me some money, I then go home to my wife, I feed my children, I come and play football with you, and I've still got enough money in my pocket for a beer at the end of the day. It doesn't get any better than that. And it was that moment of realization that you can just enjoy the day for today. And he helped me see that. And I'd sort of lost that a little bit with all that was going on. And this was an opportunity to get that back.
I think that's something that's very common, isn't it? I think it's really easy to lose sight of living in the now, whether that's because we're sort of, traumatized is probably too strong a word for most people. But, we all carry trauma from whatever element, from our past and things that we haven't sort of dealt with. Or whether that is that pressure that we feel to look to the future, it can be really hard to just stay in that moment.
Yeah, I think so. And I still have days when I worry massively about the future and where I'm going to be and all the rest of it. But I do try hard to remember that it doesn't have to be like that. It's important, I think. You know, I've got kids of my own, and I'm as guilty as any other dad of saying, you know, make sure you do your homework, make sure that you do get the right grades, because it will have an impact on the future. But also try quite hard to say it's okay to go and play football now, or fight with your brother, or whatever it is that you want to do.
Do you think that having that experience, I know you said you were concerned that it would impact upon your career negatively, and it would slow the progression down. Being out the other side now, what are your thoughts on whether it did that or not?
There's no doubt in my mind it did. So I was probably the longest serving surgical registrar in the country, because it took me so long to get back in. My CV looked like someone who wanted to do expedition medicine. And it took a long time for people to really believe that I was serious about doing paediatric surgery again. And again, that's part of the structure, isn't it? There is a structure. There is a almost, I don't want to use the word conveyor belt because it sounds so negative, but we are encouraged within the career to be focused and committed, which is right and proper. But it doesn't always allow that time to lift your head up. And I was trying to get back in on a group of people who played the game properly, and I hadn't really played the game properly, I suppose. That may be a bit harsh, but I think most people are very supportive of it. The thing that struck me more than anything else when I came back was how many people said, I wish I could do something like that. And to all of them, I said, you can. It just has to be a priority. It's like most things in life. If something's important enough to you, you can do almost anything. And I get it. I get the pressure. I get the fear that you're never going to get back. And I had some moments where I wasn't sure that things were going to work out and I was going to end up where I am. But having come out the other side, I don't think I'd change any of it. I mean, they're some of the things I'm most proud of. I'm really, really proud to do this job, but I don't think I'd appreciate it perhaps as much as I do if I hadn't taken the road I'd taken to get here.
It must be, you know, from the outside looking in, it must be a very difficult job that you do on a day-to-day basis, because I can't imagine the stresses and the strains and the pressures that you must be under, not just professionally, but, you know, there must be such a huge personal element to the desire to want to fix every child that you work with and want to make everybody better.
Yes, obviously. You don't come into this sort of work without the intention being that you make everyone better. The sad reality is that's not always possible. It sounds a bit flippant, but the bad days are really bad and the good days are really good. And that's sort of the deal that we have to make with ourselves. The impact on the people around us, I think, is sometimes underestimated. I think my wife's not a medic at all. She's a professional opera singer. And I think she would say that when the bad days mount up, that has an impact. I don't yet know what my kids think because they're still young, but it's possible, almost predictable, that at some point I'll have to answer the question, you know, why is somebody else's child more important than me, Daddy? Why have you missed my football practice? Why have you missed the cricket game or the ballet or whatever? You know, I think that comes with the territory. The support that we get within ourselves is quite special, though, particularly here. I have never been in a situation where I haven't turned to a colleague and said, just need to run this past you, or struggling a little bit with this. They've always been there. And that's one of the most amazing things about this place. I would hold that up as a massive bonus. Yes, it's crazy to pretend it isn't stressful, but I suppose we're a slightly self-selecting bunch in that if you find along the way that it isn't for you because of the stress, you don't carry on doing it. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But it does, it comes back to the fact that you are privileged enough and trusted enough that somebody will come to you with their most precious thing, their child, and put aside all of their fears about general anaesthesia or risks of surgery or being in hospital. They'll put all of those things aside and they'll say, here you go, this is my kid. They need something doing and I trust you to do it. And most of the time we get to give that child back better than it was when we got it. And I just think that's one of the greatest gifts you can give. And I still don't quite understand how someone like me ended up doing it, but I did. And I feel enormously privileged to do it.
It sounds like to me that what drives you is that determination to help other people and to make a difference.
Yeah, there's something for me about the fact that children are basically innocent. And when bad things happen to them or they're ill, that's no fault of their own. It's something that has just come along into theirs and their family's lives. And I've been lucky enough to train with some amazing people who've given me a skill set to, more often than not, impact on that positively. And the personal joy, I suppose, that you can get from that is also phenomenal. I'm thinking about a family now who I met on the neonatal unit shortly after I started here, who had a desperately sick, very premature baby who I think I operated on about three times in the space of a week. And on each of those occasions, I wasn't certain the child was going to make it. And they are kind enough to stay in touch. And I've just had a video of him celebrating his second birthday. And he's a glorious, gorgeous, amazing, rumbunctious two-year-old. And he potentially wouldn't be like that if I hadn't been able to do what I did. Or one of my colleagues, you know. And that's... I think special is the only word, isn't it? And I'm lucky enough to call that my job.
That was Mr. Chris Parsons, the consultant, paediatric, general and neonatal surgeon, who had an early midlife crisis at the age of 30, but I think learned something that we could all do with learning, really. Now, if you liked this week's episode, please do click follow, click like, give us a review. That would be wonderful. Coming up on next week's episode, we meet Megan Holmes. Now, she is a play specialist on the paediatric intensive care unit, but what a lot of people don't realise is that she is also a shepherdess and champion sheep farmer. You weren't expecting that.